Welcome to the Holiness Today podcast. On this episode, listen to a sermon by General Superintendent David Busick. On Sunday, November 5th, Nashville First Church of the Nazarene celebrated their 125th anniversary. For this service, Dr. Busick preached from Matthew 13 on the crazy farmer.
Well, good morning. Happy birthday, church. Can I just say that you're the best looking 125-year-old I've seen in a long time? And I want to bring you greetings from your global church family, 2.5 million strong, 164 areas of the world. That's the kind of a church that you're a part of. And Nashville First Church has had such an important part to play in our global church history. Now, I know I'm from Oklahoma, and so I can't technically claim the Trevecca as my home, but every time I come back, I see so many friends and so many people who have influenced my life. This feels like my second home. So whenever I'm back, it just feels like growing up with my Nazarene family. The first time that, when I began to feel my call to preach, as an example, a young college student, I was mesmerized by who I thought was one of the best pulpiteers in the Church of the Nazarene. He was a young, vibrant pastor in Portland First Church of the Nazarene. His name was Dr. Gary Henneke, and I learned... I was so intrigued by your preaching, Doctor, that as a young college student with no family budget, we started ordering your cassette tapes, and I learned about your bride, whose name was Ray Dean, and you sent me a letter. I doubt you remember that. I still have that letter, but you found out I was a college student, and you heard that I was receiving your tapes, and you put me on a retainer and said, as long as you need these tapes, they're going to come to you. A lot of my preaching in my earliest years was wanting to be Gary Henneke. So thank you for your influence on me. Yeah. And the Boones and the Gunters are dear family friends, and Christy and I mean, these are vacation people with us. We love them dearly. Right now, Trevecca has seen the best years in its history under Dr. Boone's leadership, and Denise has the best scones in the South. I can assure you of that. And I love Dr. Dwight so much, and I just want to say, I know of no other district superintendent in the United States right now who is championing the Wesleyan holiness message more than Dwight Gunter is, and I'm so thankful for that. And I'm thankful for his wisdom in marrying Karen. Karen makes him a better person. So, Pastor Kevin and Karen, thank you for this invitation. Lifelong friends, we're so thankful for the way that you're leading this great church into not just its next days, but what could be still its best days. And we just thank you for the way that you're guiding this church. Take your Bibles with me, please. And turn with me to Matthew chapter 13 as you hear one of the shortest sermons I'll ever preach. Matthew chapter 13, you've been sitting for a while. Would you like to stand and just as we read the word together? Matthew chapter 13, beginning with verse 1. Hear now the word of the Lord. That same day, Jesus went out of the house and sat by the lake. Such large crowds gathered around him that he got into a boat and he sat in it while all the people stood on the shore. Then Jesus told them many things in parables, saying, a farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil, It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched, and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still other seed, though, fell on good soil, where it produced a crop 160 or 30 times what was sown. Whoever has ears, let them hear. And this is the word of the Lord for the people of God, and we all say together, thanks be to God. Thank you. You may be seated. Well, this is a very, very famous parable. Almost all of you have heard it many, many times. People have various names for this parable. Some have called it the parable of the sower because they believe the emphasis is on the one who sows the seed. I don't disagree with that. Other people have called it the parable of the soils because these soils represent the heart conditions of people who receive gospel seed. But I'm going to call it something different. I'm going to call it the parable of the crazy farmer. Because no farmer would ever do what this farmer did. Now, why is this parable so important for us? We know it's important for a couple of reasons. Number one, because it's one of the only parables, only one of three, I should say, that appear in all three of the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Of three parables that appear in all three, this is one of them. Why is that important? Because that tells us that the early church said, we want this parable rehearsed again and again and again, and once again in 2023, we're talking about it here. The second reason I know it was important, though, is because Jesus explained it. And Jesus rarely explained his parables because the nature of parables was to be subversive. The nature of parables was to be like a ticking time bomb that would lodge itself into your heart and work on you and percolate in your mind and your heart like tick, 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 tick. And all of a sudden, maybe hours, if not days later, it would explode in your mind and your heart and dislodge you from a previous way of thinking. That was the power of the parables. And so Jesus didn't explain it. He just told them and let the Holy Spirit work. But in this instance, this is one of the very few times that we know Jesus actually explained the parable, which tells me he did not want us to miss its powerful message. Now, I believe this farmer was crazy for a couple of reasons. The first reason I think the farmer was crazy was his indiscriminate extravagance. His indiscriminate extravagance. I've already told you that these hearts, these soils, they represent heart conditions of people. So for example, the pathway ground, that represents people who have hard hearts, who are resistant to the gospel. And people's hearts can become hard for a variety of different reasons. Sometimes it's because if you're a pathway, it's because people have walked on you. Maybe someone's heart has been walked on so long that you feel like you have to become hard in order not to be hurt again. And sometimes when gospel seed comes onto your heart, it just lays on the surface. It can't penetrate the ground until Jesus says the birds of the air come along and swoop it up before it has a chance to take root. So some people's hearts are hard. Other people's hearts are shallow. This is the heart that has no depth of soil. This is the one whose heart receives the gospel seed, and it instantly grows up and becomes a plant, but because its roots are not deep, when the sun comes scorching in the afternoon, it burns it up before it has a chance to be established as a mature plant. And Jesus said some people's hearts are shallow like this ground. There's also the weedy ground. This is the ground of the thorns and the thistles. And this is the one where Jesus said the anxieties of this life begins to choke out the word, the worried, distracted parts of our heart. And he said some people's hearts are like weedy ground. But he said there's also some conditions of hearts that are fruitful grounds. And fruitful ground is the heart that receives the gospel seed, and it not only begins to blossom into a plant, but it actually begins to reproduce itself. Sometimes, Jesus said, up to 100-fold. Now, you may not know how a first century farmer planted their fields. In our world, we think of an Iowa cornfield. We think about these perfectly symmetrical rows and carefully placing the seeds in just the right place. And you drive by the highway and you see corn, you just see rows after rows after rows. That's how we often plant our fields. But that's not how they planted fields in the first century. What they would do is they would find what they believed to be a good piece of ground, and they would try to remove as many of the stones as they possibly could. And then they would cut a plow and break up the hard crust of that ground, turn the soil over, and then the farmer with his bag of seed at his side, he would reach into that bag and he would carefully begin to throw the seed around that soil. He's still very careful with it because seed was a precious commodity. And then once that seed was laid out on top of that plowed ground, then they would plow it again and dig that seed back into the ground. But here's what I want you to know. Even though they didn't plant like we do, they were still very careful because seed was precious. But I want you to see here the recklessness of this farmer. He's not careful. He's actually kind of wasteful. He's just indiscriminately throwing seed. He's obviously throwing it into the good place that's been plowed up. But then he looks over there, he sees some weeds. He says, I think I'll throw a little bit over there in the weeds. And then he sees some rocks, and he throws some of the seed over into the rocks. And over here is a path, and he throws some seed over to the path. And you're thinking, it's almost like he thinks that there's more than enough seed to go around. Why is he being so wasteful and reckless with the seed? That's why I think he's kind of a crazy farmer. First thing I want you to see is the indiscriminate extravagance of the crazy farmer. But I also want you to see something else. I want you to see the audacious confidence of this farmer. The audacity of this farmer. His confidence, it seems to be this inner strength in him, and you wonder, where is his confidence coming from? What is his confidence being placed in? And here's what I want you to see. The reason he's so crazy is that he's not the typical farmer, because his confidence is not in the potential of the soil. His confidence is in the power of the seed. If his confidence was in the soil, he wouldn't have been reckless. He wouldn't have been extravagant. But his confidence wasn't in the soil condition. It was in the power of the gospel seed. And one of the things I want you to think about, Nashville First, on this 125th anniversary, is that so often we put our focus, when it comes to our witness and our work in the world, we always tend to focus on the condition of people's hearts. That's why sometimes churches leave cities and they go to the suburbs, because cities are hard. This is a hard place. This is hard ground. And so why not go to where the new neighborhoods are and go to the place where people have families, they want to have family ministries, and that seems to be a lot more fruitful seed place. And so that's where we move to. Or when we think about evangelism, even in the Church of the Nazarene, we think about missions and we think, we only have a little bit of resource. So let's take our resource to the places where we think we're going to get the most bang for our buck. Where can we take our limited resources and get the most fruit? Which makes us say sometimes, let's not go to the hard places. You know, if places where Islam has taken root, or places where it's the persecuted church, those are not easy places to grow churches. And sometimes, because we take our focus and we put it onto the conditions of people's hearts or the conditions of the culture, we tend to focus our gospel seed there. And the reason is, we don't have the vision of the crazy farmer. Because the crazy farmer's vision was, my confidence is not in the condition of the soil. My confidence is in the power of the seed. His confidence was in the power of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And Nashville First Church, that's your confidence too. Your confidence isn't in the condition of the culture in which you minister. Your confidence is in the timeless gospel of Jesus Christ. That's the second reason this is a crazy farmer. But the last reason I want you to see here is this farmer is crazy because of his persistent patience. His persistent patience. How many of the seeds in the rocks do you think sprung up? How many of the seeds in the weeds do you think made it before he stopped throwing seed there? Now, over the course of the pandemic, I read a really important book to me, and it was something I'd never thought about before. It was called The Patient Ferment of the Early Church. And the subtitle was The Improbable Rise of Christianity in the Roman Empire. It was written by a scholar whose name was Alan Kreider. And Alan had never, he died before this book was actually published. But he did a study that I'd never seen before. And that is, he went before we had our scriptures, before we had the canon put together, the Old and the New Testament, way before that, way before the creeds had been established. So in the first 300 years of the church, the church relied on the teaching of the early church fathers and mothers, people like Cyprian and Justin and Clement and Origen and Tertullian and others that you would have heard of. So these early churches that were growing throughout the Roman Empire, they didn't have a Bible as we would know it today. They didn't have buildings like we have today. They didn't have structures. They didn't even have fully developed theologies. So how did they know what to do? How did they know how to be discipled in the faith? That was the study of Alan Kreider. And what he did is he took the treatises that these early church fathers and mothers began to pass out and just send throughout the church. They would pass them from church to church to church. And these treatises would teach them about becoming the kind of a church that would represent Jesus well in the world. And what Alan Kreider said that fascinated me is he said, I could not find any treatises on evangelism. First 300 years of the church, not one treatise on evangelism. And I kind of thought to myself, well, that's maybe because evangelism was organic. People knew they didn't have to be taught you should teach people about Jesus or tell people about Jesus. They just kind of did it. It came out of who they were. Not one treatise on evangelism. There was no treatise on church structure. The first 300 years of the church, nobody a treatise on how to do a board meeting, how to teach a Sunday school class. None of that was part of the treatises of the early fathers. But then Kreider said what he found was that there were four treatises on a different topic. Not one, not two, not three. Four treatises on the subject of patience. Four times the early church fathers were saying to this baby and growing church, be patient with the slow but the certain work of God. You can trust that God's ways will prevail. You don't have to try to take control of this thing. You don't have to try to force your own agendas. Have you ever been one of those people who just felt like God's not moving fast enough? And so you know what God wants to happen, and so you try to help God along to get done what you know God really wants to do anyway. Am I the only one that's been guilty of that? Some of the worst moments in my pastoral ministry or any of my ministry has been when I've tried to hurry up the work of God. When I have tried to get God to do what I believe God should do all along, but instead of being patient with his timing and his ways, I tried to force his hand. And we can do great damage to the church, we can do great damage to the kingdom when we grow impatient with the slow but steady and absolutely certain work of God. I was thinking about the patience of this farmer. It reminded me of a story of one of our pioneer missionaries to Papua New Guinea. This is his picture. His name was Will Bromley. Most of you have probably never heard of Will Bromley. But Will came in the early 1960s into one of the most remote places in the world. I've been to that place. The Kujip is where our hospital is. If you've never been to Kujip in Papua New Guinea, it will make you the most proud of the Church of the Nazarene that you could possibly be. It's an amazing place to this day. One of the finest hospitals in the entire country of PNG is because the Nazarenes put it there almost 100 years ago. But down below Kujip, where the hospital is, it's a place called the Jimmy Valley. It's only 42 miles, but it takes you anywhere from 7 to 10 hours to get there, depending on the rain. Dr. Warwick went there one time in a helicopter because it was so muddy and the potholes were so big and deep. When I went down to the Jimmy Valley, we had two Jeeps. And these were not the kind of Jeeps like we have here. I have a Jeep. My Jeep would have lasted 2 weeks in the Jimmy Valley. These are African Jeeps. We got into the Jeep. They had two beams on both of the Jeeps. I said, what are the two wood beams for? They said, that's in case a bridge has gone out. We're going to put these beams over and cross rivers. I said, dear Jesus, please help us. The potholes in the road into the Jimmy Valley are so big that vehicles disappear. You think I'm kidding you, but it's true. They literally go into holes, they're gone for 30 seconds, and they come out of holes. In my trip down the valley, it took us about 7 hours to drive 42 miles. And I was hanging on to both sides of the Jeep in the front seat just to keep from being thrown through the window. I did this for 7 hours, back and forth, for 7 hours straight. I got to the bottom of the Jimmy Valley, and my Fitbit said, 30,000 steps, good job. That's the best you've ever done. And when I got down to the bottom of the Jimmy Valley, I saw that missionary house that Will Bromley had built with his own hands. It's one of the places in the world in the last 10 years that I slept fully clothed with my hood over my head. There were critters everywhere. I could hear animals outside. And let me just say this, it wasn't the Holiday Inn Express. That was the place that Will Bromley went in 1960 in a family station wagon. And the ground in the Jimmy Valley was hard, and it was full of weeds. That was the place where Bromley had his first two children born, there with his young wife. And do you know that it was 7 years before Bromley had his first convert in the Jimmy Valley? For 7 long years, he threw gospel seed on hard ground, on weedy ground. He threw it on ground that where there was no response, but he was patient because he trusted the sure but certain work of God. He knew that the power wasn't in the soil, the power was in the gospel. But something happened in 1967. All of a sudden, the Spirit of God broke through. And there were two converts. And then there were 15 converts. And then there were 50 converts. And then there were dozens and dozens of converts. Until finally there were literally hundreds of people who were coming to Christ in the Jimmy Valley. One morning, Bromley stepped out of that little missionary house. I stood on the steps. It was wet. He slipped off the top of that porch and he broke his leg. It was a terrible break. They didn't know what to do for him. His wife couldn't help him. She had the babies. And so those people who lived in that village, they literally took him on their shoulders and they carried him up the 42 miles up back to Kujip to the hospital. And Bromley did not survive it. He died before they got there. The missionaries took Will Bromley's body and they took him back down into the Jimmy Valley. And I've stood at the place there where his gravesite is. Today it's a shrine where we stand and we thank God for pioneer missionaries in the Church of the Nazarene. Margaret, his young wife, and their three-year-old son, John, went back down into the valley and they served there through most of her life. And I've stood at that memorial and that little missionary house. And as far as I know to this day, it's the only district in the entire Church of the Nazarene who's named after a person. It's called the Bromley District. And today it's one of the largest and fastest growing districts, not just in PNG, but in the entire Church of the Nazarene. There are thousands of Nazarenes in the Bromley District. You think Will Bromley was crazy? You think he was a crazy farmer? Most people would say, Will, don't waste your life down there in the hard ground of the Jimmy Valley. But you know what I think about? I think about the crazy farmers that have been in the 125-year history of Nashville First. I'm thinking about all the times where it didn't make sense to do what you've done. I'm thinking about the history and the legacy of your pastors and the history and the legacy of your lay people who, no matter what the ground was like, they stopped just trusting in the ground and the potential of the soil, but they kept throwing gospel seed everywhere they went, no matter how weedy it was, no matter how hard it was, no matter how thin it was. They trusted in the power of the gospel. And Nashville First, if you want to see your best day still ahead of you, this generation has to be a crazy farmer too. Could the Lord trust you to be farmers of indiscriminate extravagance? Would you be willing to throw gospel seed on every kind of soil you can find? Would you be able to have an audacious confidence that said that my confidence is not in the potential of the culture, it's not in the potential of the urban center? That's not what we're doing. We're here because we believe in the power of the gospel seed, and that if we are patient with the slow but certain and absolute work of God, we can trust that there will be fruit for our labor, and all things will be well. Let me tell you something. If you're going to have a 150th celebration, you're going to need to be crazy farmers. And I'm going to tell you something else. The Lord of the crazy farmer says he will never leave you. He will never forsake you. And that if you be faithful to what he's called you to do, there will be gospel fruit. Thanks be to God.
Thank you for listening to the Holiness Today podcast. If you enjoyed this production and wish to hear more, visit holinesstoday.org/podcast or find us on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts.